Story 6 of the Furthest Reaches
of Space.
Medreed Short Sci-Fi, Volume 8. Blind Man's Lantern by Alan Kim Lang. Walking home in the dark from an evening spent in mischief, a young man spied coming toward him down the road a person with a lamp. When the wayfarers drew abreast, the playboy saw that the other traveller was the blind man from his village.
"Blind man," the youngster shouted across the road, "what a fool you be! Why, old No-Eyes, do you bear a lantern, you whose midnight is no darker than his noonday?"
The blind man lifted his lamp. "It is not a light for myself that I carry this, boy," he said. "It is to warn off you fools with eyes." "How's a proverb?" The captain shook hands with the black-hatted Amishman, while the woman stood aside, not concerning herself with men's business.
"It's been a pleasure to have you and Frau Stolzfuss aboard," the captain said. "Store ships are yours, my friend. If there's anything you need, take it and welcome. You're a long way from the corner grocery."
"My mother and I have all that's needful," Aaron Stolzfuss said. "We have our plough, our seed, our land. Captain, please tell your men, who treat us strangers as honored guests, we thank them from our hearts. We will not soon forget their kindness."
"I'll tell them," the captain promised.
Stolzfuss hoisted himself to the wagon seat and reached a hand down to boost his wife up beside him. Martha Stolzfuss sat, blushing a bit for having displayed an accidental inch of black stocking before the ship's officers. She smoothed down her black skirts and apron, patted the candle snuffer cap into place over her prayer covering, and tucked the wool cape around her arms and shoulders. "The world outside," her husband said, "was a cold one." Now in the Stolzfuss wagon was the final lot of homestead goods with which these two Amishes would battle the world of Myrna. There was the plough and bags of seed, two crates of nervous chickens, a huge round tabletop, an alcohol-burning laboratory incubator, bottles of agar powder, and a pressure cooker that could can vegetables as readily as it could autoclave culture media. There was a microscope designed to work by lamplight, as the worldly vanity of electric light would ill-suit an old-order bacteriologist like Martha Stolzfuss. Hauled in by all this gear was another passenger due to debark on Myrna, snuffling and grunting with impatience.
"Sei still, Wörtchen," Stolzfuss crooned. "I'll be in your home pen soon enough."
The captain raised his hand. The engineer punched a button to tongue the landing ramp out to Myrnan Earth. Cold air rammed in from the outside winter. The four horses stomped their hoofs on the floor plates, their breath spikes of steam. Wörtchen squealed dismay as the chill hit his nose.
"We're ready for gay, Captain," Stolzfuss said.
"My woman and I invite you and your men to feast at our table when you're back in these parts 5 years hence. We'll stuff you fat as sausages with onion soup and panhas, knepp and eberkuchen, schuhfly pie and schreifer cider, if the folk here grow apples fit for squeezing."
"You'll have to set up planks outdoors to feed the lot I'll be bringing, Aaron," the captain said. "Come 5 years springtime, when I bring your Amish neighbours out, I'll not forget to have in my pockets a toot of candy for the little Stolzes I'll expect to see underfoot."
Martha, whose English was rusty, blushed nonetheless. Aaron grinned as he slapped the reins over the rumps of his team.
"Get up."
The cart rumbled across the deck and down the ramp, onto the soil of Myrna. Yanni, the Ayrshire bull, tossed his head and sat, as the rope tightened on his noseband. He skidded stubbornly down the ramp till he felt cold earth against his rear. Accepting fate, Yanni scrambled up and plodded after the wagons. As the Stolzfusses and the last of their otherworldly goods topped a hillock, they both turned to wave at the ship's officers. Then, veiled by the dusty fall of snow, they disappeared.
"I don't envy them," the engineer said, staring out into the wintry world. "Hi, me. Were you born in a barn?" the exec bellowed.
"Sorry, sir."
The engineer raised the landing ramp. Heaters hummed to thaw the holds air.
"I was thinking about how alone those two people are now."
"Hardly alone," the captain said. "There are 4 million Myrnans, friendly people who consider a white skin no more than a personal idiosyncrasy.
Aaron's what his folks call a gentleman, too. We'll get along."
"Gentleman, schmentleman," the engineer said. Where'd you come half across creation to scratch out a living with a horse-drawn plough?
He came out here for dirt, the captain said. Soil is more than seedbed to the Amish. It feeds the old order they're born to. Aaron and Martha Stutzfus would rather have built their barns beside the Susquehanna, but all the land there is taken. Aaron could have taken a job in Lancaster, too. He could have shaved off his beard, bought a Chevy and moved to the suburbs, and settled down to read an English-language Bible in a steepled church. Instead, he signed a homestead contract for 100 acres, 80 light-years from home, and set out to plough the land like his grandpop did. He'll sweat hard for his piece of Myrna, but the Amish always pay well for their land.
But what do we, the government, I mean, get from the deal? The exec wanted to know. This wagon of ours doesn't run on hay, like Aaron's does.
Cultures skid backwards when they're transplanted, the captain said. Mernan culture was lifted from Kano, a modern city by the standards of the time, but without tools and with a population too small to support technology. The West African apostates from Islam, who landed here 400 years ago, slid back to the ways of their grandparents. We want them to get up to date again. We want Myrna to become a market. That's Aaron's job. Our Amishman has got to start this planet back toward the machine age.
Seems an odd job to give a fellow who won't drive a car or read by electric light, the engineer observed.
Not so odd, the captain said. The Amish pretty much invented American agriculture, you know. They've developed the finest low-energy farming there is. Clover growing, crop rotation, using animal manures. Those are their inventions. Aaron, by his example, will teach to the natives here Pennsylvanian farming. Before you can say Tom Malthus, there'll be still cities in this wilderness, filled with citizens eager to open charge accounts for low gravs and stereo sets.
You expect our bearded friend to reap quite a harvest, Captain, the engineer said. I just hope the natives here let him plant the seed.
Did you get along with him, Jaime?
Sure, the engineer said. Aaron even made our smiths, those human sharks bone for Koresh, act friendly. For all his strange ways, he's a nice guy.
Nice guy, hell, the captain said. He's a genius. That 17th century un-scientist has more feeling for folkways in his calloused left hand than you'd find in all the colonial survey. How do you suppose the old order maintains itself in Pennsylvania, a tiny Dutch-speaking enclave surrounded by calico suburbs and 10-lane highways? They mind their business and leave the neighbours to theirs. The Amish have never been missionaries. They learned in 1600 that missionaries are resented and either slaughtered or absorbed.
Sometimes digestively, the engineer remarked.
Since the 30 Years' War, back when Hamlet was opening in London, these people have been breeding a man who can fit one special niche in society. The failures were killed in the early days, or later went gay and took the trappings of the majority. The successors stayed on the farm, respected and left alone. Aaron has flirted with our century. He and his wife learned some very un-Amish skills at the homestead school, the skill that makes Aaron worth his fare out here. Though, is an Amish skill, and the rarest one of all. He knows the right way to live and lives it. But he knows, too, that your truth of the universe is something different, and right for you. He's quite a man, our Aaron Stutzfus. That's why we dropped him here.
Better him than me, the engineer said.
Precisely, the captain said. He turned to the exec. As soon as we've lifted, ask Colonel Harris to call on me in my cabin, Jean. Our Marines had better fresh up their swordsmanship and cavalry tactics if they're here to help our inert Tuaregs establish that foundry on Koresh.
It seems sometimes you're more ship's anthropologist than captain, the engineer remarked.
I'm an anthropologist, Jaime, like Mr. Kipling, the captain said. There are 69 ways of constructing tribal lays, and every single one of them is right. Bells rang, and the ship surged. Aaron and Martha, God keep you, the captain said.
Whoa, Aaron shouted.
He peered back toward the ship, floating up into grayness, the cavitation of her wake stirring the snow into patterns like fine-veined marble.
Gott segen euch, he said,
a prayer for his departing friends. His wife shivered.
It's cold enough to freeze the horns of a muley cow, she said.
She glanced about at the snow-drifted little trees and clutched her black cloak tighter.
I'm feared, Stutz. There's naught about us now but snow and black heathen.
It's fear that is the heathen, Aaron said. By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and the host of them by the breath of his mouth. He kissed her. I welcome you to our new homeland, wife, he said.
Behind them, Vitschken, Piglet, grunted. Martha smiled back at the giant porker,
perched amongst the cases and bags and household goods, like the victim of some body shiavery.
"I've never heard a big mutter so," she said.
If he knew that his business here was to flatter the local lady pigs with farrow, Vitschkin would hop out and run, Aaron said.
Dummel dich, Stolz, Martha said. I've got to make your supper yet, and we don't have so much as a stove lit in our tent.
Stutzfus slapped the team back into motion. What we need for our journey home were a few of the Altai Lieder, he said, reaching back in the wagon for his scarred guitar. He strummed and hummed, then began singing in his clear baritone. In der gut alt Sommerzeit.
In der gut alt Sommerzeit,
Martha's voice joined him. As they jolted along the path through the pine trees, heading toward Dutura village, near which their homestead stood, they sang the other homey songs to the music of the old guitar.
Traut mich drick zu alt Virgin,
nostalgic for the black-garbed plain folk left at home. Then Aaron's fingers danced a livelier tune on the strings.
Fannene fashion au, he quowed, and Martha joined in.
A new fashion I'll begin, they sang. The hay I'll cut in the winter, when the sun heat beats, I'll loaf in the shade, and feast on cherry pie. I'll get us a white smearcase cow, and a yard full of guinea hen geese, a red beet tree as high as the moon, and a patent leather fence. The chickens I'll keep in the kitchen, they sang. Whereupon Martha broke down laughing.
It's a new world, and for now a cold world. But it's God's world, with home just up ahead, Aaron shouted.
He pulled the wagon up next to the Arctic tent that was to be their temporary farmhouse, beside the wagon loads of provision he'd brought before. He jumped down and swung Martha to earth.
Light the stove, woman. Make your little kitchen bright, while I make our beasts feel welcome.
The Amish woman pushed aside the entrance flap of the tent. Enclosed was a circle some 12 feet wide. The floor was bare earth. Once warmed by the pump-up naphtha lantern and a gasoline hot plate, it would become a bog. Martha went out to the wagon to get a hatchet and set out for the nearby spinney of pines to trim off some twigs. Old order manner forbid decorative floor coverings as improper worldly show, but a springy carpet of pine twigs could be considered as no more than a wooden floor, keeping two plain folk from sinking to their knees in mud. The pots were soon boiling atop the two-burner stove, steaming the tense air with onion tangy tzitzvelet soup and the savoury pork smell of schnitzelknepp, a cannibal odour that disturbed not a bit of a chicken snoring behind the cook stove. Chickens, penned beneath the bed, chuckled in their bedtime caucus. The cow stood cheek by jowl with Yanni, warming him with platonic graciousness as they shared the hay Aaron had spread before them. Martha stirred her soup.
"When the bishop married me to you," she told Aaron, "he said naught of my having to sleep with a pig."
"Ah, but I thought you knew that to be the purpose of Christian marriage, woman," Aaron said, standing close.
"It's votes, I mean," she said. "Truly, I mind not a bit living as in one of those automobile wagons since it was you, and only for a little while."
"I'll hire a crew for our neighbours to help with the barn tomorrow," Aaron said. "That done, you'll have but one pig to sleep with."
After grace, they sat on cases of tobacco to eat their meal, from a table of feed sacks covered with oilcloth.
"The man in the ship's little kitchen let me make and freeze pies, Stolz," Martha said. "He said we'd have a deep freeze big as all outdoors. Was out electric, so use it. Eat till it's all, man. There's more back."
Yanni bumped against Aaron's eating elbow.
"No man and his wife have eaten in such a zoo since Noah and his wife left the ark," Aaron said.
He cut a slice of schnitz pie and palmed it against the bull's big snout to be snuffled up.
"He likes your cooking," he said.
"So Vash's face,"
Martha told him. Outside the tent there was a clatter of horse iron on frozen ground.
"What the die-hinger is that?" Aaron demanded.
He stood and picked up the naphtha lantern. Outside, Aaron saw a tall black stranger astride a horse as pale as the little Mernan moons had lighted him.
"Rankishi dada,"
the visitor bellowed.
"May your life be a long one," Aaron Stolz repeated in Hauser.
Observing that his caller was brandishing a clenched fist, the Amishman observed the same ambiguous courtesy.
"If you will enter, O welcome stranger, my house will be honored."
"Mother bless ye, bearded one,"
the Mernan said. He dismounted, tossing his reins to one of the four retainers who remained on horseback. He entered the tent after Aaron and stared about him at the animals, letting his dark eyes flick across Martha's unveiled face. At the Amishman's invitation, the visitor sat himself on a tobacco case, revealing as he crossed his legs elaborately embroidered trousers and boot tops worked with designs that would dazzle a Texan. Martha bustled about, hiding the remains of their meal. The Mernan's outer dress was a woolen riga, the necklace gown of his West African forefathers, with a blanket draped about his shoulders, exactly as those ancestors had worn one in the season of the cold wind called Harmattan. Aaron introduced himself as Haruna, the Hausa version of his name, and the guest made himself known as Saki, chief of the village of Datura. His name was Kazantsumi.
"Mother bless thee, bearded one," the Mernan said.
He dismounted, tossing his reins to one of the four retainers who remained on horseback. He entered the tent after Aaron and stared about him at the animals, letting his dark eyes flick across Martha's unveiled face. At the Amishman's invitation, the visitor sat himself on a tobacco case, revealing as he crossed his legs elaborately embroidered trousers and boot tops worked with designs that would dazzle a Texan. Martha bustled about, hiding the remains of their meal. The Mernan's outer dress was a woolen riga, the necklace gown of his West African forefathers, with a blanket draped about his shoulders, exactly as those ancestors had worn one in the season of the cold wind called Harmattan. Aaron introduced himself as Haruna, the Hausa version of his name, and the guest made himself known as Saki, chief of the village of Datura. His given name was Kazantsumi. Vutskin snuffled in his sleep. Saki glanced at the huge pig and smiled. Aaron relaxed a bit. The Islamic interdict on swine had been shed by the Mernans when they'd become apostates, just as colonial survey had guessed. Stolzfus's Hauser, learned at the homestead school at Georgetown University, proved adequate to his first challenge in the field, though he discovered, with every experimenter in a new language, that his most useful phrase was Magana Sanu Sanu, please speak slowly. Aaron let the chief commence the desultory conversation that would precede talk of consequence. Martha, ignored by the men, sat on the edge of the bed, reading the big German-language Bible. Aaron and Kazantsumi sang on in the heathen tongue about weather, beasts, and field crops. The Saki leaned forward to examine Aaron's beard and shaven upper lip, once, and smiled. The Mernan does not wear such. He looked at Martha more casually now, seeing that the husband was not disgraced by his wife's naked face, and remarked on the whiteness of her skin, in the same tones he'd mentioned Vutskin's remarkable girth. Aaron asked when the snows would cease, when the earth would thaw. The Saki told him, and said that the land here was as rich as manure. Gradually the talk worked round to problems involving carpenters, nails, lumber, hinges, and money. Aaron was pleased to discover that the natives thought nothing of digging a cellar and raising a barn in midwinter, and that workers could be easily hired. Suddenly, Saki Kazantsumi stood and slapped his palms together. The tent flap was shoved open. Bowed servants, who'd shivered outside for over an hour, placed their master's presents on the sack table, on the twig floor, even beside Martha on the bed. There were iron knives, a roast kid, a basket of peanuts, a sack of roasted coffee beans, a string of dried fruit, and a tiny earthenware flask of perfume. There was even a woolen riga for Aaron, black, suggesting that the survey had said a bit to the natives about Amish custom. And there were bolts of bright patterned cloth, too worldly for aught but quilts and infant dresses, brightening Martha's eyes. Aaron stood to accept the guest gifts with elaborate thanks. Saki Kazantsumi as elaborately bemeaned his offerings.
"Musa the carpenter will appear on tomorrow's tomorrow," he said. "You will, the mother willing, visit me in Datura tomorrow. We will together purchase lumber worthy of my friend neighbor's barn making. May the mother give you strength to farm, Haruna. May the mother grant you the light of understanding."
"Sanu, sanu,"
Stolzfus responded. He stood at the door of his tent, holding his lantern high to watch the Saki and his servants ride off into the darkness.
"E ish en grossi fish ni?"
Martha asked.
"The biggest fish in these parts," Aaron agreed. "Did you understand our talk?"
"The heathen speech is hard for me to learn, Stolz,"
Martha admitted, speaking in a dialect they'd both been reared to.
"Well, you had only the alien speech to study. I spent my time learning to grow the buglets and tell the various sorts apart. Besides, Unser gute deutsche Spruch, als unser leises Fest ist gut genug für mir.
The honest German tongue that our Saviour spoke is good enough for me. Aaron laughed.
So, als verschunde Mädel, I married, he said. Woman, you must learn the Hauser too. We must be friends to these Svotzers, as we were friends with the English speakers back in the United States.
He pushed aside the bolt of Mernon cloth to sit beside his wife and leafed through the pages of their familiar Bibel, pages lovingly worn by his father's fingers and his grandfather's.
Listen, he commanded. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains, and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of oil, olive, and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness. Thou shalt not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills thou mayst dig brass. When thou hast eaten an artful, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee.
Aaron closed the big book reverently.
Amen, he said.
Amen, the woman echoed. Heaven was you beside me, I am not fretful.
And with the Lord above us, I fear not in a strange land, Aaron said.
He bent to scrape a handful of earth from beneath Martha's pine-tree carpet.
Guter Grund, he said. This will grow tall corn, tobacco too. The folk here relish our leaf. There will be deep grasses for the beasts when the snow melts. We will prosper here, wife.
The next morning was cold, but the snowfall had ceased for a spell. The Stolzfusses had risen well before the dawn, Martha to feed herself, her husband, and the chickens, Aaron to ready the horse and wagon for a trip into Detour. He counted out the hoard of golden carries he'd been loaned as grubstake, did some arithmetic, and allowed his wife to pour him a second cup of coffee for the road.
You may expect the Sarki's wives to visit while I'm gone, he remarked.
They'll be scared half to death,
Master Stolzfuss said. A hand went to the back of her head behind the lace prayer covering.
My hair is all strooby. This place is untidy as an auction yard. Besides, how can I talk with those dark and heathen women? They're more decked out in golden bangles and silken clothes, most likely, like the bad lady of Babylon. Aaron Stolz, I would admire a pretty to ride into town with you.
Haggling for a hired help is man's business, he said. When Cousin Zumi's women come, feed them pie and peaches from the can. You'll find a way to talk, or women are not sisters. I'll be back home in time for evening chores.
Bumping along the trail into Detour, Aaron Stolzfuss studied the land. A world that could allow so much well-drained black soil to go unfarmed was fortunate indeed, he mused. He thought of his father's farm, which would be his elder brother's, squeezed between railroad tracks and a three-lane highway, pressed from the west by an Armstrong cork plant, the very cornstalks humming in harmony with the electric lines strung across the fields. This land was what the old folks had sought in America so long ago, a wilderness ripe for the plough. The wagon rumbled along the hoof-packed frozen clay. Aaron analyzed the contours of the hills for watershed and signs of erosion. He studied the patterns of the barren winter fields, out and showing here and there the stubble of a crop he didn't recognize. When the clouds scudded for a moment off the sun, he grinned up and looked back blinded to the road. Good tilth and friendship were promised here, gifts to balance loneliness. 5 years from spring, other Amish folk would come to Homestead. What a barn raising they'd have. For now, though, he and Marta come from a society so close-knit that each had always known the yield per acre of their remoted cousin German, where in a land as strange as the New York City, Aaron, stopping in for a phone call to the vet, had once glimpsed on the screen of a gay German neighbor's stereo set. Detour liked to Aaron like a city from the Bible, giving it a certain vicarious familiarity. The great wall was a block of sun-baked mud, 50 feet tall at the battlements, 40 feet thick at its base, with bright, meaningless flags spotted on either side of the entrance tower. The cowhide-shielded gate was open. Birds popped out of mud nests glued to the mud wall and chattered at Aaron. Small boys, wearing too little to be warm, appeared at the opening like flies at a hog slaughtering to add to the din, buzzing and hopping about and waving their arms as they called companions to view the black-bearded stranger. Aaron whirled his horse and took a handful of aneens, copper tenpenny bits, to rattle between his hands. "Tsonang," he shouted, "come here. Is there a boy amongst you brave enough to ride off with an off-worlder to the Psyche's house, pointing him the way?" One of the boys laughed at Aaron's slow, careful halter.
"Let Black Hat's whiskers point him the way," the boy yelled. "Uraka, ubaka!"
Damning both parents of the rude one, another youngster trotted up to Aaron's wagon and raised a skinny brown fist in greeting.
"Sir Offwalder, I, who am named Waziri, Musa the carpenter's son, will be honoured to direct you to the house of Saki Kazunzumi."
"The honour, young man, is mine," Stotzfus assured the lad, raising his own fist gravely. "My name is Haruna, son of Levi," he said, reaching down to hoist the boy up beside him on the wagon seat. "Your friends have ill manners." He gedapped the horse.
"Buzzard heads,"
Waziri shouted back at his whilom companions. "Peace, Waziri," Aaron protested. "You'll frighten my poor horse into conniptions. Do you work for your father, the carpenter?"
"Too, Honourable Haruna," the boy said. "Yes."
The empty wagon thumped over the wheel-cut streets like a wooden drum.
"By the mother, sir, I have great knowledge of planning and joining of all the various sorts of wood and the curing of them. All the tools my father uses are as familiar to me as my own left hand."
"Carpentry is a skilful trade," Aaron said. "Myself, I am but a farmer."
"By mother's light, so am I,"
Waziri said, dazzled by this coincidence.
"I can cultivate a field tree of all its noxious weeds and touch never a food plant. I can steer a plough straight as a snapped chalk string, grade seed with a sure eye. I can spread manure."
"I'm sure you can, Waziri," Aaron said. "I need a man of just those rare qualifications to work for me. Know you such a paragon?"
"Mother's name, myself, your honour."
Aaron Stotzel shook the hand of his hired man, an alien convention that much impressed Waziri. The boy was to draw 300 anines a day, some 35 cents, well above the local minimum wage conventions, and he would get his bed and meals. Aaron's confidence that the boastful lad would make a farmer was bolstered by Waziri's loud calculations.
300 coppers a day make in 10 years' work a brown cowry. 10 big bronzes make a silver cowry, the price of an acre of land. Haruna, will you teach me your off-world farming? Will you allow me to buy land that neighbours yours?"
"Sei still, Bu," Aaron said, laughing. "Before you reap your first crop, you must find me the Saki."
"We are here, Master Haruna."
End of part 1.